Hello, everyone. It's Bill Thompson, T-Bill, and welcome to Plain Market Talk, where I will provide a straightforward interpretation and analysis of current market news based on my background as a retired Wall Street stockbroker with almost 50 years of experience. And I will also provide business lessons to help you become much more successful with your personal finance, trading, and investments. So let's get started. Hey everyone, it's Bill Thompson, T-Bill. Welcome to Plain Market Talk. Today is Thursday, August 10, 2023. Okay, it's 12:42 in the afternoon Eastern Time. Markets are generally up right now. We got the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 0.39%, S&P 500 up 0.35%, NASDAQ Composite up 0.44%. You had inflation report come out today, the Consumer Price Index. It shows that annual inflation is now running at 3.2%, a little under the expectation of 3.3%. Quite a bit below the 9.5% we had a year and a half or so ago. Federal Reserve, though, is still looking for a target rate of a little over 2% a year. You do want to always have some inflation in an economy because it incents consumers to spend money, and almost 70% of the U.S. economy is consumer spending. The idea is that, you know, if prices were coming down, people would hold off on buying, but with some inflation, his incentive, well, might as well buy now rather than wait for the prices to come up. But anyway, but that's being looked at as good news by the markets. Okay, we've got a few other things we're going to talk about today. Everything from Disney raising the price to Disney Plus to the Hollywood strikes that are going on. And today I'm going to begin coverage of cryptocurrencies. And I'm going to be doing this over multiple sessions. It's going to be fairly extensive coverage. Today, what I'm going to do, though, is just start out with a basic definition of what a cryptocurrency is. And I'm going to spend some time over the next couple of sessions on the definition and uses of money. I think that'll be a good basis then to continue on with cryptocurrencies. But with cryptocurrencies, we're going to talk about everything. What are they? How are they created? What are blockchains, data mining, pros and cons of cryptocurrencies, possible the future cryptocurrencies, lots of stuff we're going to talk about, but we will get to that. Okay, Disney, their trading symbol is DIS for Disney. Yeah, they released their earnings after the market closed yesterday. Basically, market seems to generally like what they saw. Numbers came in a little bit better than expectations. Disney is showing, though, a decline in attendance at Disney World here in Orlando. And, you know, we've noticed that those of us that go out there just hear about things. What it may be, a lot of people after COVID started going like to Orlando theme parks and so forth, and attendance was at record levels. And now what's happened now, a lot of people are moving on to going on cruises, trips to the mountains and so forth. So that's brought attendance down some at the Orlando theme parks, although it is all relative. On a typical day, the Orlando theme parks have well over 100,000 people there. We've also had, like most parts of the country and the world, extreme heat this summer, and that may be keeping some people away. But Disney announced, for good or bad for everybody, they announced they're raising the price of the Disney Plus streaming service to $13.99 a month, basically $14 a month. I actually got it at $4 a month for three years or something when it first came out, some special deal they had. Anyway, but the market actually does like that. Disney is up 4.3% right now at $91.25 a share. Yeah, we're moving into a new world with streaming services. Basically, the streaming services, HBO Max, now just called Max, you know, all the other ones, Peacock Network, Paramount Plus, Disney, Netflix, and so forth. The newer ones in particular, they were basically just trying to get customers, eyes on the screen, as it was called. So they were keeping their prices relatively low, coming out with all this new content. And basically, the streaming services, for the most part, the newer ones have been losing a fortune, including Disney. They're losing billions of dollars on Disney Plus. They're now beginning to move, though, to where they're trying to make these streaming services profitable. So they're beginning to cut back on some productions, actually dropping shows that are already on there to avoid paying residuals. And now beginning to raise their prices. So we'll have to see what the effect of that's going to be. Basically, these streaming services are well aware. I'm sure Disney's aware. When they raise prices, almost $14 a month, yeah, they're going to lose subscribers. But the idea is it going to be enough subscribers to cause a big difference in overall profitability, or at least reduce the losses? It's an economic concept called elasticity. Basically, for every 1% increase in price, if you lose more than 1% of your business, it's considered that it's an elastic product and that it's probably not worth raising prices. But if you're considered to be inelastic, what that means, for every 1% increase in price, you lose less than 1% of your business pays to raise prices. I've talked about elasticities on previous sessions, but that's the whole idea. Disney's probably well aware that they're going to lose subscribers, but is it going to be enough to overcompensate for the price increase? All right, so we got that. Hollywood writer strike we have going on in the actor strike. Okay, so I just saw a number that the actor strike has now hit 100 days, so that is significant. Or was it actually the writer strike? One of them hit 100 days. It's a writer strike, 100 days. The actors just went on strike recently. Basically, there's been some accusation that, particularly with the actors, that the big Hollywood studios may be willing to wait them out until basically the actors cannot pay their rent, make their monthly bills, and then they'll come running back. So, that's a possibility. That is what they're trying to do. That's the way a lot of strikes were broken in the 1880s, 1890s. That was probably the biggest period in American history where we had labor issues and strikes and so forth. And then sometimes what would happen, the employers would simply wait the strikers out because you're not getting paid when you're on strike, and then basically would break the unions that way. So maybe that's something they're looking at. That may or may not work, though. I've looked up some numbers here. Basically, the Actors Guild, Screen Actors Guild, and the American Federation of Television Radio Artists, they have about 160,000 members. And the reason that may not work, most of them actually do not act full time. They've got other jobs, other sources of income. So it's not like their income has been cut off 100%. Basically, of the 160,000 members, it's about 1,400 of those are considered A-list actors. And I use actors for male and female. In other words, they're famous, they're well-known, they have millions of dollars. All right. So they're not going to be affected by that. Assuming they got plenty of money already. Okay, so, but then you have, of the 160,000 members, apparently one of the benefits of joining the union is that you get access to health insurance. And what I found out, though, from looking it up, is that you have to make at least $26,780 a year as an actor to qualify for health insurance, and only 12.7% of the 160,000 members qualify. So most of them are making under $27,000 a year, the vast majority of them. And so almost 87% of them are making under $27,000 a year. So most all of those do work other jobs. And so that may or may not work, trying to break them, since most of them have other sources of income anyway. Yeah, one thing about acting is that I've actually done acting myself. I was in theater groups when I was younger, but it was just like very amateur stuff. But it's got an easy point of entry. Anybody could wake up one day and say they're an actor. I know to become part of the union, though, is a little bit harder. But there are non-union actors also. So one strategy the studios may try to use, I'm not saying I agree with this, but it's what they may do. One way they may try to break the strike and break the union is they'll cut a deal with the screenwriters. See, they're more in demand because it's not as easy an entry process there. So cut a deal with the screenwriters, end that strike, and then begin basically trying to offer actors positions in movies and TV shows outside the union. Whether that'll work or not, we'll have to see. But anyway, all right, so we got that news. Okay, got a few other things here. Saw the rent in Manhattan just hit a new record of $5,588 a month. I mean, like, wow. Basically, $5,600 a month. I used to have an apartment in Manhattan back in the 80s, but give you an idea of how much things have changed. I had this small one-room unit. I had like a kitchenette over at the one end. The bed came down out of the wall, a Murphy bed. I was paying $700 a month for that, but it was also being heavily subsidized. I used to live across the street from Madison Square Garden, 8th Avenue, 33rd Street area. And the trading firm I worked for on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, they were willing to subsidize apartments for us. I think that even the full rent back then was like $1,800 a month. I was paying $7. The reason they did that, they wanted some of us physically in Manhattan. A lot of the senior traders lived upstate New York, out in Long Island there called Southampton. And the idea is that really bad snowstorms or something, they knew we could always get to work. We could walk if we had to. So anyway, $5,600 a month, basically, for now for an apartment in Manhattan. One thing about living in New York City, though, used to say, well, you don't need a car, so you save money there. But it's not going to make that much of a difference. Those of you wondering, how do people basically afford to live up there? One thing they do is, you know, you have two or three people sharing an apartment. That's one way. But a lot of people just live out in the boroughs. New York is made up of five sections called boroughs. Manhattan is the one where the skyscrapers are. But they live out in Queens, Brooklyn, Staten Island, the Bronx, or they live further out upstate New York, over in New Jersey, across the river, or out in Long Island. So anyway, all right, so we got that going on. All right, what else we got today? A few other things. We'll talk about cryptocurrencies. You might have heard the other day that, I've talked about there's three companies that rate bonds, Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch, and Fitch downgraded the U.S. government a week or so ago, although the other two rating services did not follow. And then Moody, they said they put some big banks, Bank of New York, State Street, Northern Trust, under review for possible downgrade. So we'll see. The other rating services have not followed on that. But, you know, the thing with rating services, it's always going to be an opinion. So we'll see. All right, so we got that news. Anything else I wanted to see here? I guess that's basically it. All right, so let's talk today about cryptocurrencies. All right, so basically, what is a cryptocurrency? Well, it's money created on a computer and then traded between different individuals, businesses, and so forth. So basically, it's a digital currency, and what it does, it uses cryptography basically to validate it. And the key is, though, is that it doesn't have a central bank or government involved, although a lot of governments are looking to start their own cryptocurrencies. Of the 230 countries in the world, I read 114 are looking into starting their own cryptocurrencies. But basically, it's digital money. It's money created on a computer without a central bank or government being involved, and then people exchange it back and forth. All right, now I know that's an extremely basic definition, but I will cover that in much more detail going forward. Now, one thing about cryptocurrencies, people have very strong opinions on these. Some people say they're the wave of the future, they will become the only currency of the future. On the other end, you got people that said they're going to go extinct the way of the old dodo birds or something. As I've talked about really for the last 2 years or so, I've been more in the middle on cryptocurrencies. I think they're too well entrenched to go anywhere. It's a multi-trillion dollar market now. I don't think they're going to take over everything, but it's become another form of money. And I also did start talking, though, I know I start talking like November 2020 or something, 2021, sorry, about how I thought there'd be a retrenchment in cryptocurrencies. There's like over 30,000 of them. And I thought it was like the dot-com stocks, you know, they were highly inflated in price. And then they came tumbling down, would come tumbling down. But the strong players would survive like they did with the dot-com stocks. So yeah, I'm more like that in the middle. I certainly think there is a future for cryptocurrencies. All right, but anyway. But yeah, and I gave you the very, very basic definition, digital money. Now, actually, most of our money is digital anyway when you really think about it. I mean, think about how much money you might have in your bank account, like when you get paid or something. and how little of that money is actually in your pocket in cash and coins, right? So we're actually used to using digital money anyway, but everything from debit cards, credit cards, to checks are another form of actual digital money and so forth. So it's nothing like anything new. But anyway, all right, so we'll talk more about, though, what cryptocurrencies are. I gave you, like, the most basic of definitions. All right, so basically, though, to finish things off today, I'm going to talk about the next few sessions. What is money? Okay, so what money is, it's basically the official definition is a system of value that facilitates the exchange of goods in an economy. What the heck does that mean? Basically, it's a medium that both sides recognize as having basically the same value that one is willing to exchange for the other in exchange for a product or service. Now, this is different than bartering. What bartering is you simply trade one thing for another. And so that's the most basic method of exchange. You're a farmer from a few thousand years ago, and you exchange some crops that you grew in exchange for something else. Maybe somebody has made a metal plow that you would like to purchase, but what you would do, okay, I'll give you this much of the crops I grew in exchange for the plow. That's basically bartering. That's the most basic form of monetary exchange. Problem with bartering, though, is you've got to find somebody willing to exchange what you want to exchange back and forth. Both parties have to agree on this. They have to physically meet. That's another problem. And then there's the question of the value. Are you agreeing on what one is worth compared to another? All right, so that's the basic definition of barter. So on the next session, though, I will get more into specifically what is money, and historically, what forms of money have we had, and how does cryptocurrencies now begin to fit into that, digital cryptocurrencies? But that'll be on the next session. Anyway, I hope everyone's doing well. Again, Bill Thompson, T-Bill, and I will talk to everybody again soon. Take care. See ya.